Today's news.
Hello, welcome to Old News, the programme and podcast which looks at news stories of the day through the papers of yesterday. Continuing our little holiday break at the moment and dipping into the wonderful volumes of A Chronicle of the 20th Century from 1901 to 1950. That's volume one, put together originally, of course, by our very own Terry Kringle, with other wonderful articles from the likes of Robert Kelly and Robert Foster, Frank Cowan, Gordon Knifton, all presented in a Manx radio type news style. And some wonderful stories wherever you open this book to dip into it. I was thinking about airports the other day, as Jerby Airport and Hall Caine was mentioned on the Man in Line, and looking at 1911, the news of 1911, over 100 years ago now, but doesn't sound that far off, does it, somehow or other? However, this was the year the very first aeroplane was seen on the Isle of Man. And did it take off in Jerby, or Hall Caine, or down the south of the island? No, none of the above. It took off from Nobles Park, would you believe? However, crowds were disappointed, apparently. The summer season began, we read, with a hectic round of attractions organised by Douglas Corporation to celebrate its jubilee as a municipality and the coronation of King George V. There were great demonstrations of public boards, Sunday schools, etc., to which were added an extensive programme of athletics, motor racing and concerts. At night time, the whole extent of the promenade was lit by electric light fairy lanterns. Yeah, we're missing those now, aren't we? Power being supplied by the Manx Electric Railway Company. One of the highlights planned for Timwell Day was an 80-mile race around the island between the steam packets Ben McCree and two aeroplanes transported to the island especially for the occasion. The Ben McCree racing a plane. Those were the days. Mind you, could still win. An aerodrome was set up in the newly opened Nobles Park. Only one of the aeroplanes, however, a Farman biplane piloted by the famous aviator Claude Graham White, managed to take off for the race, but wind conditions were so treacherous the pilot had to turn back after reaching Onchan Head. This meant that many thousands occupying vantage points around the island were to be bitterly disappointed. Nevertheless, Mr. Graham White was back in the air later in the day and was able to escort the Ben McCree back into Douglas. Good man. At the fancy dress parade held in the palace in the evening, the pilot was received with thunderous applause. Quite a hero in those days. No cockpits or anything. It was just basically sitting on a wing of the biplane, completely unprotected and in the open air. Brave man. And it was the early days of aviation, let us not forget. Strikes. You often think of them in modern times. Of course, nothing new. No news there. 1911. Two strikes. Douglas tramways hit by a strike. With the celebrations concluded, we read, the Douglas Bay horse trams and the Upper Douglas cable cars were suspended from services for a day. This was the result of drivers and conductors seeking to improve their basic pay of 26 shillings and sixpence for a week. Does that sound too bad? Maybe not for 1911, but perhaps it doesn't sound so good when you read, the week could be anything up to 114 hours. If you think people working 80 or 90 hours these days, they feel like they're working rather a long time. Most people, it's 40. 114 hours was a possibility for people working on the trams. The article goes on, the Tramways Committee sanctioned new terms which were accepted. The horse tram men gained a 72-hour, six-day week for 27 shillings. That's still a long working week, with overtime payment and an extra 4 shillings and sixpence for Sundays. Yes, you'd want to do overtime after doing a 72-hour week, wouldn't you? The cablemen also had a reduction in their working week to 72 hours, drivers now being paid 30 shillings and conductors 27 shillings a week. No overtime available, but extra is paid for Sunday working. And the 45 horse trams in operation are highly profitable and carry over 1.75 million passengers a year, while the 650,000 passengers using the cable cars barely cover the cost of the undertaking. Nevertheless, the combined tramways operation makes a valuable contribution to the relief of the town rate. Can you imagine it? 1.75 million passengers a year on the horse trams. I don't know what the numbers are these days, but I'm pretty certain they're nowhere near 1.75 million. More to the point, they were making a lot of money, perhaps not surprisingly. Whereas even though the trams seem to be full these days, they all seem to be run at a massive loss. Never quite understood that. Well, there were more strikes. The rail strike hits the visitor arrivals. The number of summer visitors arriving in Douglas in 1911 has been severely hit by the week-long railway strike in the United Kingdom. It also caused a panic exodus by thousands of visitors, afraid they would be unable to get home. Saturday, the 19th of August, saw 16,000 departures, while arrivals were down from 15,000 to 5,000. The British government sent the Royal Navy cruiser HMS Warrior to Douglas in case the strike spread to steamship services. Wireless communications between the Warrior and Whitehall were exhibited outside the government offices and created great interest. And if you thought behaviour was so much better back in the day, well, I'm afraid not. I mean, it's shocking now when you hear someone being killed on the Isle of Man, but in 1911... Man dies after fight, we read. A man has died following a fist fight over a game of cards at the Mona Social Club in Douglas. He was 38-year-old greengrocer Eugene Charles Agnew of Albany Street in Douglas, who died from internal injuries after leaving the club below the Walpole Hotel. The man he fought with, 26-year-old wholesale newsagent Benjamin Howarth, was arrested and charged with manslaughter, but the charge was dropped after the inquest decided there was no evidence to show that Agnew's injuries were a direct result of the fight. And I think possibly the first fatality in the TT was recorded in this year. Practicing for the TT motorcycle races held in June was marred by the death of the first rider in the series, which began in 1907. 19-year-old Victor Surridge from Essex, a member of the Rudge Whitworth team, died instantly from head injuries when he crashed into the rock face at the exit from the Glen Helen. Team officials based at the Glen Helen Hotel rushed to give assistance, but there was little they could do. As a mark of respect, the Rudge Whitworth team was withdrawn from the races. The tragedy coincides with the motorbikes changing to the Snaefell Mountain course pioneered by the cars. And although Craig Willies was part of the St John's circuit, the jury at the inquest stated they believed the Snaefell course was too long and had too many bends for riders to learn. When we're still there, and I must admit most of us do ponder how on earth you remember all the corners at the speeds they race at now. The move to the Snaefell Mountain course, we also read, has also seen the introduction of a junior race for the popular 2.5 horsepower machines. The race was won by a Humber at 42 miles per hour. The senior race was a clean sweep for the Indian team from America. There's a wonderful picture in the book as well of the Quarterbridge Road full of bikes and police standing by. No sign of the houses, certainly on the riverside, the Tramode side, which must have been built post-1911, if I'm looking at this picture correctly. And finally, the bishop condemns young visitors. The Bishop of Sodor and Man, the Right Reverend Thomas Drury, has made a strong attack on impropriety of behaviour by young visitors to the island. In a hard-hitting sermon, he said young men and women were too familiar with each other. They were to be seen in public places, lounging in each other's arms, which was, and I quote, sickly, unwholesome, and fraught with serious peril. This follows criticism by church leaders in the island of alleged licentious conduct by people attending the free concerts held in public houses in the summer. Holding hands, arms round each other. Disgraceful behaviour. It's a wonderful thought, isn't it? Is there anything new? No. Things change, and fashions change, and technology changes, but basically human behaviour stays exactly the same, I feel. It's all old news, as they say. More next week. Until then, cheerio. You're gonna be yesterday's news.